I have to imagine that Mrs. Garrett is buried in a you know, Viking style earth mound in like a longboat with the scattered Facts of Life keychains arrayed around her.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Why?
I don't know.
Facts of you just have to imagine.
Yeah, that's just how I feel about it.
It's, I pissed off this gypsy woman, and ever since then, I have to imagine that all the time. Is somebody please kill me? I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Dave.
No, no.
And I'm Dave.
Ah, there you go.
We're supposed to say, and I'm Kevin. Everybody, it's 70 video games hot dogs.
70?
70.
There have been 69 of them, and this is the number 70.
Oh. Sweet. Oh, I missed 69, dude.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say you missed it, Dave.
Okay.
Dave's our buddy. He's joining us.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, me.
How you guys been? Has anything funny happened? Have you read any funny books?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Okay, good.
The end.
Tell us about them, Kevin.
I read The Hunger Games.
Was it funny?
It was all funny?
No, it really wasn't actually very funny.
Okay.
I found the books to be okay. They were kind of like, they're kind of like adventure-y and fun at the beginning, and then they get like all political and depressing at the end.
Mm. I enjoyed the first like three quarters probably of the first one.
Yeah.
And I found like the politically stuff sort of interesting because it was, you know, targeting kids so young. But then the second,
babies. Yeah.
But then when the second one started off, not only did it felt a lot like they undid a lot of the character development that happened at the end of the first book.
By killing all of the characters.
And there was not a lot of like consistent character.
No. Turning them into mutant werewolves.
And then, yeah. But then I gave up shortly. Actually, no, I'm lying. I made it all the way through the second book and didn't like any of it, and I made it two pages into the third.
You made it all the way through the second book before you remembered that you don't know how to read.
Yeah. I always do that, too. I finish so many books and then realize only afterwards that I didn't read any of the words because I don't know how to read.
You know what happened 6 hours ago in Matthew Lillard's life?
Yeah.
According to his Twitter post, I was feeling down, and then I trimmed up my pubic region, and then I felt totally dominate.
Hmm.
I'm saying this not to make fun of Matthew Lillard because,
no.
as you all know, I fucking love Matthew Lillard and I don't care who knows it.
Well, also, you love to trim your pubes.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm an enthusiastic fan of pube trimming, mm-hmm. and I love to feel dominate.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing this up because I am super happy about the way the world is. The fact that we know this. Hmm. We know that 6 hours ago, well, sometime prior to 6 hours ago, yeah. Matthew Lillard trimmed his pubes and improved his mood.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I mean, he might be referring to some supermodel's Mons pubis as his pubic region, right?
That's also true.
You never know. I hear that once you get famous enough, you're allowed to own slaves. Is that true?
Hmm.
I mean, if you can afford time travel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You get rich enough to go back in time to any time prior to Abraham Lincoln. Well, I mean, I guess it wasn't. There was a time when Abraham Lincoln, there was probably a time when Abraham Lincoln was someone's slave. And that's why he was so angry about it.
Mm. Later. He was a baby.
He had an agenda. Yeah. He was a slave. He was a slave to his mother's teat.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
No other way to put it.
Yeah. He was keeping him down.
You made a proclamation the other day that anyone who feels like they cannot quit their job is a slave.
I did. I believe that. I can see why somebody would be annoyed with me for saying that.
I mean, someone who doesn't feel like they can quit their job and doesn't feel like a slave would probably be pretty like annoyed.
Oh, right. But my point is that those people are wrong. About one of those things. I don't think that...
You think that almost anybody could quit their job and they'd be okay. They'd figure something out.
Yes.
Yeah. And so...
Even if it was, oh, fuck, I need to go beg for that job back.
So is this...
Because it turns out that my job was holding on to the rope that kept me from falling into a pit of lava.
Huh. Do you make good money doing that?
You know, it really doesn't matter. Mm. It's kind of you make whatever they pay you and you're glad to have it. Hey, Riff, are you tripping balls?
Not yet.
Good. I mean,
Should I drink some more of this?
You should talk to your spirit. You should talk to your spirit animal. Riff doesn't drink that often, but when he does, he drinks. He drinks the tripper. Green fairy.
Oh, so you're giving away. Like, I just tweeted. I posted a picture of all of our beverages and said, can you guess which beverage goes with which VGH deer?
Mm-hmm. The water goes with Dave.
Yeah,
because Dave is a pussy.
I know. It's ridiculous. He doesn't like, he likes to spoil everything.
Look, I'm peeling back the curtain. I don't want listeners to feel like they are enslaved by our secrecy.
So I've watched a bunch of movies and TV shows in the past week.
Tell us more.
So I watched The Machinist. Have you seen this?
It has been on my Netflix for a long time, but
it's good.
Haven't got around to it.
It's definitely good.
I've been waiting to watch that one for a while. I don't know.
Christian Bale gained several levels of respect in my eyes for his performance in that role. He also,
because of the thinspiration that he provided.
Like he fucking lost like 50 or 60 pounds to play that role.
Oh, I hadn't actually thought of it like that before. That's the only thing that, like, you don't care about the movie.
You just love the fact that he's like super
skinny.
Yeah, which is why you're such a fan of Tom Hanks.
Yep.
Because of all the weight that he lost.
He was really good in...
That's why you hate Vincent D'Onofrio.
Not The Illusionist. What was the other one?
The Prestige.
The Prestige, yeah.
Which really Zach good. Just watched this past week.
Yeah.
He was not unimpressed.
I mean, I liked it. I just didn't. My expectations were built up too much because I watched The Illusionist and I thought, wow, that was not. That movie was decidedly less than the sum of its parts, is the way that I put it.
I felt like The Prestige was good. Like, I mean, I bought The Prestige. I did not buy The Illusionist, and I felt like The Prestige like had several different twists in it that were kind of cool. Plus, it had Tesla. I mean, come on.
You try it, but not just Tesla. David fucking Bowie as Tesla.
Yeah. And like understated, too. Like it was like not over the top. It was great.
The book is really good, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Having seen the movie, you now know what the secrets of the book are, but I think it's still worth reading the book.
Who wrote the book?
I couldn't tell you offhand.
David Bowie.
No. Okay.
As Tesla, as whoever.
Pretty impressive.
What else did I say? I watched Once Upon a Time in the West. Which is like it's like regarded as one of the best Western movies of all time. It's pretty misogynistic.
I know that I've seen it, but I'm having trouble remembering.
Henry Fonda plays like the villain. Charles Bronson's like the hero, but he's like he's never named in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. He's like known as a harmonica.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. No,
is that, I mean, that's a name, right?
No, I mean that's like a nickname that's like given to him during the movie.
Guess why it's his nickname?
Yeah.
Because he plays a pan flute.
Yep.
Close.
Exactly. Close? Like they were Zamf harmonica. Yeah. No. Yeah. It was pretty good, but like, you know, it's pretty dated.
I think that in a movie that predates Zamfir, you would not expect someone playing the pan flute to be referred to as Zamfir.
Mm-hmm. Presaging.
Prescient, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like that one gladiator who always chose a soprano saxophone as his weapon, and the other gladiators called him Kenny G to make fun of him. That didn't make any sense, Kevin.
I'm curious why Italians were so interested in the American West,
like Sergio Leone, like in Sierra Leone.
Well, because he directed like a bunch of movies.
Yeah, they made the spaghetti westerns,
right?
So called because craft services
in Spain
only.
What the fuck? It's like neither the American West nor Italy,
right?
What the fuck? It's more like, you know, churro
cowboys
westerns.
Cowboys are kind of like America's version of leprechauns.
Yeah, it was because it was a so close to that time myth.
I did not go to high school with any leprechauns, so I'm gonna have to disagree with your crazy drug-addled ramblings there, Riff.
I mean, you went to a school with a bunch of people who wore cowboy hats and cowboy boots
and went home to raise cattle. Like they
They nurtured them in the bottle.
Yeah, no, they
did. Did they like spend their summers like taking the cattle up to Chicago and stuff?
No,
I knew some Irish kids who went home to chase after the
the pot of gold.
So it turns out that modern cattle drives are often done with like a truck.
Mm-hmm. Wait, they literally drive the cattle?
Yes, they drive. Yeah, they drive them. Yeah, that's
wait.
That's
or do the cattle just drive themselves?
Yeah, no,
because
highly trained cattle.
Huh.
I've been on a Western kick for a while myself, just been like going through pretty much every Western that I could find on the Netflix instant
video. There's a bunch of like classic movies.
And the movie Western Kick, which is about a cowboy inventing his own style of martial arts.
Ooh,
and then competing against the Gymkhana guy.
There are tons.
I mean, I think part of
whose
my problem...
name, Gymkhana, is strangely
is it like
appropriate.
One of the first Western movies I saw was The Unforgiven, right? Which is like kind of like an apology for
isn't it
either
just
Western movies.
Unforgiven?
Yeah.
One of the first science fiction movies I saw was The Star Wars.
Yeah. And like I feel like seeing that, it's like seeing a bunch of like modern gangster movies and then going back and watching Godfather. Mm-hmm. You don't think Godfather is all that special because it's all the other movies have borrowed
so much
yeah.
from it, you know, that set the
and then seeing any modern movie and then going back and watching Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Realizing, oh, right, flashbacks. That was where that got invented.
Right.
Or reading modern comics and going back and reading Watchmen is very similar.
I thought you were going to say Sally Forth. Reading modern newspaper comic strips and then going back and reading Sally Forth.
And then another movie I watched was called We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Okay.
Oh.
What did you learn about yourself?
Apparently, I am a violent person who shoots up high schools.
Well, I mean, something that we didn't know.
Well,
is that a movie about school shootings?
It's not about that.
It sounds like a funny comedy.
It's actually really, the title, doesn't tell you anything about it at all. The Tilda Swinton plays the main character who's like a mom who raises a kid that she just does not connect with at all and ends up being kind of like a violent dick. And it is kind of fascinating. Just the character, the way that they develop the characters over time. It's definitely worth watching.
Is it like The Good Son starring Macaulay Culkin?
It isn't like that. It's like not that over the top. It's very within the realm of the possible. You kind of feel sympathetic. Not, I guess you don't really feel sympathetic for the kid because he's just kind of an asshole. But it's like this weird relationship where he's super nice to his dad, but he and his mom just never get along, and he's just kind of like.
Well, so you were really on a misogyny. You just went to the misogyny subheading
apparently,
of Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. And then I watched.
How old is Once Upon a Time in the West? I mean, Charles Bronson is dead, right? And hasn't he been dead for a while?
Was it?
I don't know.
Late '60s, I think.
Maybe I'm thinking of some future time in which Charles That's Bronson possible. Has been dead for a long time.
It was a long time ago.
Is Henry Fonda's dead too? Right,
I think so.
Because he was old as shit when
he was pretty old. He was pretty full in that.
And the kids taught him how to suck face.
Yeah.
Did you guys see On Golden Pond?
I did not actually see.
That is the only thing that I remember about that movie. There's some punk ass teenager who describes sucking face to his grandpa as what the kids these days call kissing, which we did at the time.
Did you guys suck face?
Well, no. No, I was an unpopular nerd kid, and nobody wanted to suck face with me.
You can't do it by yourself.
I guess maybe you could.
With maybe like a vacuum?
Suck face with a watermelon just for practice.
Huh.
My grandma had this creepy dress dummy that if I hadn't been horrified that it would swallow my soul, I might have sucked face with it.
Oh, look, it had a head and everything?
Yeah, well, the head was the problem, right? The dress dummy itself was just
Did it have a hole in the mouth? And then maybe...
No, it didn't.
The head was it inflatable?
It was a styrofoam head-shaped thing that was for wig. It was my grandma used to run a beauty shop.
Okay.
And had some wigs for sale, I guess. I don't know. On these horrible fake heads that she drew faces.
Oh,
on.
That's
always the worst.
Just leave them blank.
So it was, and when we would stay at my grandma's house, that was the fucking, I think that my dad just made sure that it was in whatever room I had to sleep in just to fuck with me. As a kid, I couldn't believe that that would actually happen. But looking back, that is exactly like something that he would do. Wow. There was a painting at the top of the stairs that I was terrified by as a child, which later became a thing that I proudly, ironically displayed on my wall. It was a black velvet. It got lost in a move.
Oh, that sucks.
I left it at a house that I moved out of because I didn't want to fuck it up moving it. And then when I came back a couple months later to get it, it had fallen off of a thing and gotten destroyed.
Oh,
and they
sucks.
Threw it away. Like I could, I oh, sort sucks. Of fixed well, it.
With or they maybe so, they sold it because it was actually an original Elvis.
It was a black velvet painting of the devil's head, like just a big Satan face. I have scans
like
of it.
Like that rockabilly to the devil's face? Or?
Well, no. I mean, this was from the 60s. This was like a thing that my dad bought in Mexico for And later on, I found out the story of this. He and a buddy of his were in Mexico, and they found a place that was selling these paintings for $4 each that they bought because they were so big. It's not that they were good. They bought them because they were really big.
Uh-huh. $4 for a giant painting. Like, the frame alone is probably worth more than that.
Sure. Probably not, actually. you could believe that, I suppose. But it was the devil.
You can make
and
a dress
him,
out of the velvet.
Around him were all of the things that would maybe bring you closer to the devil. There were some dice.
Okay.
So the devil was actually really good. It was like a nice looking painting of the devil, but everything around it looked like it had just been drawn by a child in white. Yeah, just white on the black. So there was a pair of dice. There was a joint, which I think was actually part of the good aspect of the painting because it was creating a smoke that wreathed the entire rest of the painting. There was a syringe because I guess the
doubling up on the drugs.
Injectable antibiotics, I guess, are a
was
thing.
Was there a Dungeons and Dragons manual?
Takes you further away from God. This predated Dungeons and Dragons by
was there a sexy
many
lady?
Years. There was. Oh. There was a sexy nude lady reclining in a... what was probably supposed to be a martini glass, but it was curved and wrong. So it was more like a weird, shallow champagne flute.
Okay.
Like it was just, it was just like a champagne flute with the aspect ratio wrong.
But it must have been giant to fit the naked lady.
And then there was a corner in which they couldn't think of any other sins, so they just drew a bunch of spider webs. Anyway, but that was placed right at the top of the stairs to the attic, which I think they did so that I would not wander up to the attic and just snort do lines of asbestos or whatever was up there. I don't know if they were trying to protect me from something in the attic or if they were trying to protect the contents of the attic from me.
Or, you know, they were trying to label the attic as where they kept their cocaine.
Yeah, where they kept all the awesome stuff.
And their
I thought you were saying, like, they were trying to turn over my traditional religious beliefs. No, no, no. If you go up, that's where the devil is.
Oh.
In the basement, the basement was actually really cool. It was equally terrifying. There was a coal bin in the basement, which is just like a room with a sort of a trapdoor at ground level that you would use to shovel coal into it. And then,
old school houses.
Pretty horrifying. And all of the pipes were wrapped in asbestos and then surrounded with World War II era newspapers. Ooh. So as you walked along down there, you would see like, U.S. fleet sinks Jap transport. That was one of the headlines, literally.
Huh.
Yeah. And then those all got like just wrapped around with some sort of safety tape when it came time to sell the house. Damn it.
Wow, so they don't even realize that they've got these treasures.
Well, I mean, they're treasures that are covered with asbestos, so they're probably like, these treasures are probably not worth asbestos.
Right? Like, asbestos is not a big deal unless you disturb it, and then it gets angry.
Yeah. You wouldn't like me when I'm asbestos.
Yep. I watched some Heroes, the TV show.
Oh, yeah?
That was really... I often think back.
Did you watch a lot of it?
I watched all of it except the season where they went to the carnival. I finally gave up.
I watched some of the first season, and like it was okay, but and like
really
it felt like
the first.
It seemed like it was like building up to something, but then I was like, it started to get very soap opera, and I just like lost interest.
What ended up happening was it was either during the second or the third season there was a huge writer's strike, so they had to hurry up. Like they had more than half the season left.
A bunch of them had a baby. They came in.
And they did like a super quick 2-episode wrapping everything up.
They decided to throw a party where Kid and Play came to
it
DJ.
Was just silly. And then they, but it never recovered. And it was unfortunate because that first season and a half I remember really, really being enthralled with.
I feel like I don't have a lot of faith in TV shows. Like they don't write the shows. They like sort of... it's just part of the business, right? Like they make a pilot and then it gets kind of picked up
and then the pilot decides to call in sick.
Well, and then they have like maybe like a 13 episode arc in case they get canceled in the middle of the show. Mm-hmm. And then they have like a season arc, but they don't know where they're going. Like Lost was just like a meandering miasma of bullshit, right? Like,
well, it was like a science project for them. Yeah, like it was, they were, more than anything, they were trying to
see how long they could make it last.
Focus on the cliffhanger and, like, you know, perfect the art of the cliffhanger.
Right.
And what's weird is when they found that vault with that Laserdisc game Cliffhanger in it that had the hands and feet button in addition to the joystick, and every time somebody died, they got hung because they only had so much footage to work with.
I mean, it seems like they set up a good narrative arc for the first season because they don't know if they're going to get a second season, but... after that happens, they suddenly have to develop more story that they weren't prepared for.
Yeah.
I mean, the same thing happened to Twin Peaks. I mean, it seems like so many TV shows would be so much better if they said, in advance, this show is going to last one season. That's all you get of this show.
Well, I mean, even the shows that they do say, like, this has a limited lifespan, they end up getting fucked by, like, being canceled on their fourth season out of five or whatever.
But it's also easy to say, we plan for this show to be five seasons, and we have five seasons of it written out. But, like, no, they don't. Nobody ever has that, right?
They have
next week's episode done, and then they have, like, a outline for some episodes in the second season, and they have a vague idea of what's going to happen in the fifth season. Also, in the reason that the first arcs are often good is because the writers will get together and they will sign a pact that they are all committed to making the arc as good as possible, which they usually refer to as the covenant of the arc.
Babylon 5 had a solid five season arc planned from the beginning, and then
didn't it take place on an arc?
Yes.
Like, weren't they moving from one planet to another with two of every ridiculous anthropomorphized...
Yeah.
Fized.
And
let me start over.
Handjob
alien.
And then they got, like... They were in danger of getting canceled in the fourth season, so they wrapped up the show early, and then they didn't get canceled. So they had to, like, continue the story, even though they wrapped
everything up. And then Charisma Carpenter got pregnant with, like, 40 weird spider alien babies.
Exactly.
Ah, that was so gross.
It was terrible.
That's why, in general, like, over the last 5 years, I guess, I've really gotten into the habit of not watching
a show until it's
an episodic TV show at all until it's completely done and somebody says, you know, definitely watch this.
It kind of sucks because by doing that, you are
contributing to its downfall.
Like, yeah, you're kind of part of the problem because you're not, like, providing advertising eyeballs for shit while it's on. But, like, it's the right thing to do if what you want is to get quality entertainment. I mean, this is why, like, HBO needs to make every show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Dave, have you worked on any interesting movies or television shows lately, or is it just all political commercials?
I did a couple of days on, there's a Nickelodeon show called Soup on Ninjas, which is basically like
S-O-U-P space on...
S-U-P-A ninjas.
Supa.
Oh, Supa Ninjas. Okay.
Yeah, Supa Ninjas.
Not like soup on ninjas. No. Like, the premise of today's episode, cream of broccoli on Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat.
But aside from that, it hasn't been too interesting. I did a little indie film.
You're thinking of Scorpion, and that is the French Onion episode.
Oh, I just lost all my nerd cred.
Shame.
Sorry, go on.
No, I had two indies over the last year. The last one was a Matt Damon
joint
anti-fracking.
Film, oh yeah,
which was really interesting.
Was it that stop fracking in the Karoo?
It wasn't. It was not the stop fracking in the Karoo. It was the stop fracking in Western Pennsylvania.
Are they fracking there too?
Oh, it's like crazy.
Huh.
It's
what
really
TV. Was it Battlestar Galactica?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Different.
Yeah, it was all about how we destroyed the planet with fracking, and that's why it became a bad word.
Okay.
In the future, or the
one
past.
One is CK what? And one Both. Is just K.
Really?
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's just Matt Damon wants to make commercials about how people shouldn't fuck.
That was the entire point of the
movie. Yeah, I mean, it's a well, his ulterior motive is that he wants nobody else to fuck so that he's the only one that gets to fuck all the sweet,
you know,
sweet
ladies.
He just
doesn't want people to fuck in Western Pennsylvania.
If I had to pick one dude to, like, be the, like, father of the future of the species, it might be Matt Damon.
Really?
He's pretty great. He's like, smart. And interesting. And
I think I would pick me.
I would pick maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson because I want
he's
there to be plenty
too.
Of sweet, sweet, sweet mustaches
yeah.
in the future.
He's pretty great too. I'd be okay with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Alternatively, Adolf Hitler.
Sweet mustache. Huh.
Now see, in a different time, we would all be descendants of Adolf Hitler, like we're mostly descendants of Genghis Khan.
I don't know that we are mostly descendants of Genghis Khan.
I don't know if you are. I certainly am.
Yeah, I'm a pretty direct line to Genghis.
I don't think I'm.
Dave and I are pretty swarthy, and have you seen us, horseman? Because we are good at horsemaning.
Yeah, we horseman all over the place. Like
you do. Good. You guys do often crave horse blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes when I'm like, you know, we're on a long road trip, and I just you want to stop and go to the bathroom and go to Taco Bell or whatever,
right.
And I'm like, no, I just want to push on.
I need
on.
To puncture a horse.
I want to puncture a coolant line and drink some horse blood from it, and then I remember that cars don't actually have a system that circulates horse blood through them.
It's well, because most cars.
That's the reason why I drink so much Mountain Dew.
Well, you get like a Mustang.
The secret ingredient.
Oh.
We made a horse joke with a car joke.
I did. Yeah, Mountain Dew is to horse blood what you are to Genghis Khan.
Yes.
Okay.
Have you been playing any games, Rev?
Last night I played, there's a new iPad game called The Room, which is very, very good.
Is it an Escape the Room game?
No, it is sort of the inverse of an Escape the Room
game.
Get into a room game?
Do you get a bunch of picks? You can buy a pick for 50,000 pounds?
It is an open and elaborate puzzle box game.
Okay.
It's all 3D, very visually beautiful, very tactile. You've got this elaborate wooden and brass and clockwork puzzle box, and you swipe the screen to move around or tap to focus on a section of the box, and you're trying to find the little panels that slide open and the keys that fit into the keyholes. And
where's the room?
It is the box is the room.
I think the box is the room. Yeah. Either that or it's
and
just
are you a giant?
To, no, you're just a guy.
It's a small room.
Either that or the room is referring to the one room in which this puzzle box is kept.
Or the room in which you're sitting while you play it. So if you play it outside, there's a cheat code that detects the sun and makes you stop.
It makes you blind.
But yeah, it's gorgeous. If you like puzzle boxes and clockwork and putting a brass key in a keyhole and then turning it, it's a pretty good game.
Dave showed me some steampunk laptops that people had made, one particular dude had made, I guess. And it is effectively just a wood and brass case around your laptop, but it makes it look like a music box that you then open, and then you can like wind it, and then that turns it on.
Nice.
The problem that I have with that style of project is keeping a laptop long enough to make it worth it, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
because it was like $5,000 for one of these cases. Yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah.
Although I think that was an older.
That was
site.
Like so 4 or 5 years
back
old.
Then you had like an extra 2 or 3 years on your laptop.
I mean, I have a laptop that still works that I bought in 1999. Right.
Well, it works.
I mean, I have used it recently to do some work because
new versions of Photoshop
were
open anyway.
Shit. Yeah. I mean, the newest version is great. The newest version of Photoshop.
I mean, and somebody has to make those funny animated GIF captures of various things happening in movies, like a sassy black woman saying, "Oh no, you didn't."
That's my favorite one.
You're right. And then you put it captions, you know, because there's no sound in an animated GIF.
Right.
That laptop will still look good, though, on a shelf.
Exactly.
Down the line.
Yeah, but the point of it is, for it to be a functional object, right? Like, because it could have been, you could have made something look like that a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm.
But it would also, but I mean, can it run, can it play games?
Yeah, I mean, I guess
can you
once
play Fallout?
I mean, I guess as long as you can run Arcanum of Steamworks and Magicka Obscura on it, then you're good.
I mean, you can, if nothing else, you'll always be able to use it as an electronic, like, picture frame.
Paperweight. You
know? Yeah.
An electronic anchor.
Yep.
As long as it can play Minecraft, it'll be the only computer I ever need.
Man, you won't even recognize the Minecraft of the future, man.
There's a Minecraft Easter egg in Borderlands 2.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. There was a Minecraft Easter egg in, well, not Easter egg. There was a Minecraft feature in today's XKCD.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fucking crazy. Did you bother spending any time looking at that?
A little bit, yeah.
I can't imagine how long he spent on that one.
I'm guessing it was probably a couple of days. Like, I think, because there's only, you know.
But there's jokes.
50 or 60 jokes in it, maybe?
Do you know what the like, real world size was of the full image?
I don't think that means anything, Dave.
I mean, there was
100 pixels per inch figure.
What? Right. So if you're just going to make some shit up, you could make up the whole dimensions. It's exactly 4 inches wide, Dave.
The file
at an arbitrary number of pixels per inch.
If you
that
had
I
it
just
at,
made up.
If you had it as a grayscale image, it would be 13 gigs of image.
Wow.
But yeah, I think if you were to print it out at the scale of each person being a millimeter tall, which is I don't even know what the DPI would be on that. I think it was like 20 feet by
that's crazy.
Something else.
Mostly black or white.
Yeah, yeah. Cause, I mean, there's
well,
not there's
especially since it was a black.
Really, in fact, the entire Bible is just black and white.
That's true. That's true.
Well, as long as you don't have one of those fancy limited edition
illuminated manuscripts.
Ones, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, holograms. And I guess you know the Jews would argue that it is anything but black and white.
That's true.
I mean, really, the Jews will argue about anything. That's why they're so great.
Yeah, I spent some time
arguing with Jews.
Well, dating a Jewish girl and going to Jewish services, and they were kind of fucking great. They, like, every week, it was just like somebody would, like, here's a thing that I want to talk about. Like, and each week would be a different person, sort of bringing, like picking a topic and talking about it. And they would, like, consult, you know, sort of rabbinical, like, discussion on the subject. And then you would talk about it for a couple of, like, minutes. And it was great.
It's a lot like what we're doing right now.
Well,
it's
yeah.
But it's a very nerdy religion.
Yeah, it right? was it yeah, was great. Yeah.
Like, you got to watch that you don't piss somebody off to the point where they turn into Ryan Gosling. Because then later they'll be like a crazy murderous wheel man.
Judaism is special in that it has a really deep respect for teachers and science
yeah.
that a lot of other religions don't.
Well, at least in America.
Yeah.
There's for Scientology. I mean,
yeah,
it's got science.
It's right there in the name.
Right yeah. in the name, yeah. And L. Ron Hubbard was one of our foremost educators. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dianetics. He taught us how to...
That's true.
He taught us how... loud prenatal noises are responsible for many of our personality traits. That is the only thing that I remember from the chapter of Dianetics that I read. Huh. I'm probably remembering it poorly.
It's in the book.
Did you play the Dianetics board game?
No, was
There's
there one?
A board game?
Oh, oh man.
Oh, we have to make one.
I'm picturing something wow. very much like Chutes and Ladders.
I was trying to transition into asking if you'd played any other games.
I don't want to learn enough about Scientology to make a board game based on it.
Yeah, they might come after us.
I mean, you could probably just watch that episode of South Park and learn all you yeah. need to know to make a board game.
Right, That's or true. You could just do Monopoly, crazy bullshit edition. I played
Crazy Bullshit Sedition.
Guild Wars 2?
They're coming out with a Mac. They're
coming out with Guild Wars 3?
A Mac beta client for
Yep,
it.
I saw that. So maybe you guys can play Guild Wars 2.
Huh.
You don't want to play Guild Wars 2. Yeah, Kevin, you are not allowed to
okay,
play Guild
see, Wars. I was trying to tell you years ago that I was not allowed to play World of Warcraft, and you're like, no, let me buy you a subscription to it. You
First think. One's free.
That's sort of what happened to Xenophobe, too.
Yeah, I destroyed a lot of company productivity by wanting to share this fun thing that I found.
It was great. It's like the best game.
I'm so glad I've stayed away from it.
Mm-hmm. You were just asking today, how long is it going to take me to do
Not me.
And see everything?
One. The infamous one. If all I wanted to do was look at it.
Not for me. A friend. My friend was asking.
I was just, I wanted to know numbers. I didn't know how big because the game has been around for how long now?
Keeps changing. 7 years. The amount of time that it's been around for keeps changing by like 1 minute yeah. per minute.
That's crazy. Yeah,
it's shooting into the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was interested to see how large the game had sort of become.
It's about 20 gigs.
Speaking of which, we got asked on the other show about World of Warcraft yeah. skill stuff. Are we going to talk about that?
If we can remember.
We could.
We should do it now because we'll forget.
Let me find that question from that person. You guys continue talking about what you've been playing.
Yeah, Dave, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing, I introduced Kevin to a board game called Hive. And I found a Java client that runs it, and so I've been
playing it on the online
incessantly with the.
You're just playing against the computer.
I've been playing against
human, the computer, human opponents.
And they named the computer Dumbbot, which makes it that much worse when he's kicking the shit out of you. And so, like, I lost the first game pretty hardcore, and then I spent the next like 6 hours only being able to.
Do you
want to
just describe what this game is?
So it is basically, it is a boardless sort of chess game. You've got a number of pieces that have different bugs on them. And they all
hexagonal
move,
tiles.
Yeah, hexagonal, chunky hexagonal tiles. And yeah. they all move different ways. And the point
like,
of
like
the game.
Like chess pieces. And you have a couple, like you have three of some, and you have two
yeah,
of some,
two
and one of some.
And you're trying to surround your opponent's queen bee with pieces.
Yeah.
And,
It's you taught it to me in like 5 minutes, and we played like four games, and it was great.
Yeah,
it was super. Really it's super like fun. It's very much like chess. The games are much shorter, but there's a ton of depth and strategy to it.
And it's okay to play it and to support the guy that makes it because in the instructions he thanks Jesus for creating all things.
Yeah.
I don't think that anyone believes that Jesus created everything.
He does.
Well. I mean, so you, like there is the notion that Jesus is just one part of the three-part Trinity of God.
Do you think that the Catholics would say, do you think if you asked the Pope, did Jesus create everything?
Yeah.
Do you think the Pope would say yes?
Because
I'm pretty sure it's only Catholics that believe in
that. I also don't think he would respond to you in English.
Rise of the Triad. I bet he speaks English.
I mean, he might, but I don't know that he would respond to you in English.
But if you asked him in English,
I think that
if you ask the Pope a yes or no question in English, you're telling me he's going to be like, oh, babbity-babbity-boobity-boo.
Are you trying to say that he would answer that question with a yes or a no?
Yeah, he would give you an answer that was not a yes or no, but that was
an hour long.
It is a yes or no question. I'm not saying, do you ask tricky, slick Bill Clinton a yes or no question, and he gives you 400 paragraphs of Italian. I'm saying the Pope. Yo, Popo. Popo. That's my term.
Popo.
Yes or no.
Do you know when people are worried about the Popo that they're talking about something else?
Yeah, that the Pope, they're going to get excommunicated. Don't do that. The Popo will come after you. You're going to get excommunicated if you rob that liquor store.
Yeah.
No, if you said to the Pope, yo, Popo, yes or no, did Jesus create everything? I think the only thing that he will tell you is no, which is a trick question because it's the same in Italian.
The question is the same in Italian.
Yeah. I guess, okay, trick answer? No, I'm sorry. The Pope has a trick knee. Which he's like, whoa, and he opens up a hatch in his knee and smoke pours out and he disappears.
Is it black smoke or white smoke?
Pulls a quarter out of it.
Nice papal callback. Papal protocol.
All right, let's read this question out of order.
All right, yeah, listener's mail during the What Have You Been Playing segment. Because that's all, right? Nobody else is...
No.
We've been working.
I played a bunch of board games.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
We'll talk about them.
Yeah, well, but that's... Okay, I mean, as long as it's up on the screen and we're not going to forget about it.
It's
okay.
On the screen. We're not going to forget.
So, we played a couple of games of Dominant Species, the card game. Mm-hmm. It's all right. It's
simpler. It's simpler than you'd think.
Yeah,
it
is. Scoring is complicated. Made me miss the board game a lot. I haven't played the board game in a while.
You kicked my ass when we played.
It was a lot more.
It was extremely
like
lopsided.
Your opening hand and the next three sets of cards that you drew just did not lend itself to you getting any points.
Dave is as good at board games as Kevin, at least, and so it's
You often beat me.
Now, at least there is less certainty when you play a board game when Dave is
both
in town.
Of us.
Yeah, it's not that Kevin will definitely win; it's that either Kevin or Dave will win. Kevin wins by not fucking everybody. Dave wins by fucking everybody. Two different paths to victory.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. There's the Matt Damon path, and then there's the do as Matt Damon says path.
And then the other game that I kind of actually do want to spend some time
on. Oh, and then there's the Matthew Lillard path, which I take, which I don't, I'm not actually good at the game, but I feel like I am dominate because I just shaved my pubes.
Mm-hmm. Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So talk about this game.
So it just sort of as a physical artifact, it is beautiful. Like it is a... They spent a bunch of time and energy making like a beautiful board and like all the pieces and everything. Everything is like a sort of a nice like physical instantiation of
except
a board.
Except there's a book that should be a leather bound tome that is in fact just a
spiral bound. Yeah, that's true.
But the fact that it's an inch thick spiral bound book that comes in this board game is significant.
It is a game where you tell
a bunch
of... It adds at
least one more significant digit to the price of the game.
A game where you tell a bunch of stories. Like a bunch of things happen to your character. You wander around in a world and like you encounter a bunch of people and things and you do a bunch of things and you get to like... You have some kind of agency in this world, but...
It's very random.
It's extremely random.
The choices that you make with the character can affect the story as it's unfolding.
So basically, like, the guy behind you has a book. You draw a card that says what you encounter, and the guy behind you, you roll a die, and then he consults a chart in the book and says, all right, you have encountered a fruity magician.
Yeah.
And then the guy to the left of you, who's holding the encounter matrix, says, fruity magician, eh? Consult chart E on your player board. And then E has a list of things.
A list of verbs.
A list of verbs that you can perform on a fruity magician.
And it's like 8 or 10 different verbs, and you can examine them or rob them. So it's like a lot of different stuff. And you have skills. You start off with some skills, and you acquire skills throughout the game.
Right. So like
and you can sort of like
if you want to say like, okay, okay, I want to trick the fruity magician, and you know that you have quick thinking
and acting in disguise,
wisdom, and you have acting in disguise. Yeah, and so you think, well, maybe that'll work. But then it turns out that in order to trick the fruity magician, you need to be able to beat him at a boat race, and
or
so
you need to be able to cast magical spells
without seamanship. You can't. Without semen, all things are not possible.
Exactly. So I had a bunch of fun playing this game,
this
but
is,
I also
that's kind
felt
of
like it
a
was
true statement because if we did not get cheap goods by boat from China, we would not be able to do any of this shit that we're doing
that's
right now.
That's also true.
That's true.
Everything that we're using, everything in this room, except for us, came from China.
Some of
unless
it might
you
have been
consider
from
us
Taiwan.
To be descendants of Genghis Khan,
yeah.
In which case we also came from China.
Thank you, Steven.
This booze I'm drinking is French.
By way of China.
Yeah, they invented green.
I liked the game, but I also felt like it was a strange set of systems.
There are a lot of systems
the wind
for a very little game.
Weird.
The win condition is also pretty weird. Like, you just have to, like,
return home and say that you can win.
You are, sometimes you'll get married, and then it's like, anytime you go anywhere, you got to go back and check in with the old ball and chain and then roll some dice to fuck her.
Unless you get the gender bending adventure, in which case you're not, what was it like,
you can't court anymore, and if you're forced to court because you're a werewolf, it turns out that, and then one time I told the story of the day that Abu farted.
Yep, that was great.
I never
actually
saw that one. That's
yep. Well, there are like 3,000 different encounters. There are 3,000, like, the book is like this
with
big choose your own adventure book too. And so it is so random and so heavily like a storytelling game that I wish that it had fewer systems and fewer pieces to keep track of.
Yeah,
and like,
I think I would have gotten a lot of the same satisfaction out of it had it not been tracking skills and
or not even necessarily
like
if the
statuses
board,
and stuff.
If you weren't like, oh, how far can I move or whatever. I mean, that is sort of about like accomplishing goals in the metagame.
Yeah, I mean, so one thing that the instruction manual said that I didn't realize, there were like two or three things that were a little weird. Is that the higher the numbers in the die rolls and on the board or whatever, the more dangerous the encounters are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So lower numbers are supposed to be less dangerous and the higher numbers are supposed to be more dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that I wasn't necessarily aware of.
I had a sense of it from looking at the charts because it was like, you get a number from 1
storm,
to 12 or whatever, and it was
storm.
Like, is it a friendly wizard or a fruity wizard or a
vengeful
irritated
wizard
or eventually, like,
fingerly?
When I had played, I didn't play with these guys. I played probably about a year ago with a separate group of friends.
With a group of actual Arabians.
Yeah. But it
Arabian
felt
Knights.
As though all of the choices that I was making, they didn't really add anything, and they didn't. Like, even if I was able to bump up some numbers, I was never really given the opportunity to use those in any kind of intelligent way. So,
I
enjoyed it.
Like, you can do a bunch of things that seem really reasonable given your skill set, and then because of the random nature of the way that the encounters are written, it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
And so, one person, Kevin, gets all the points and all the skills to begin with.
I do tend to roll really well, for whatever reason.
It's just how you roll.
It is how I roll. Yeah. So other than that, I played some stand-up video games like Rampart and Solar Fox and had a
Rampart
good time.
Rampart is a real stand-up video game.
I know, right?
Say.
I've been practicing every morning.
Have you?
Yeah. I turned the volume down so nobody would wake up. And
wait,
I've,
really?
Yeah. I've been practicing
but
every
you
morning.
You like figured out how to open the cabinet and turn the volume down?
Oh, you don't
down?
Know how to do that? I can show you. Yeah,
we did, but
you just did
stay
it on
the fuck
own?
Out of my video games is what I'm saying.
I'm sorry. But now, yeah.
I don't
hopefully
go to your house and just start flipping switches on shit. I don't even know where you live, Dave.
You know that there are capacitors in it that could kill you, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't go near those.
All right. Okay.
That would be bad.
Anyway, you could totally play Rampart at full volume.
Yeah.
I would love
we
nothing
fine
more than
to
wake up
to
every
that.
Day to ready, aim, fire. That's what that guy sounds like.
Yep.
It's pretty good. And there's a lot of flourishes of
three
trumpets.
Three player Rampart.
Damn right.
Pretty good.
Yep.
It is pretty good.
Two player Rampart. Probably better.
You think?
Yeah, because two people
three player
gang
has
up
more,
on one.
Three player has more of a dynamic. But I mean, if you gang up on somebody,
it becomes two player Rampart.
Well, yeah. I mean, the more you can only do, the more damage you do to their castle, sort of the better off they are past a certain point, right? So you can only meaningfully two people gang up on one person and do actual harm.
You can blow up their
to
cannons.
A certain extent. Yeah, that is, I feel like that's almost never worth doing.
With also with three players, the amount of space you have becomes pretty cramped.
Yeah, but that's good. I mean, that makes the game end.
Sure, sure.
Right, because you don't want to, you don't want to.
I kind of want to trade volleys back and forth for a long time.
I want to build a castle. It always
feels
to me.
Playing a single player, the rounds end too fast.
Yeah,
the boats are hard to hit.
I want just a little bit more time to build.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you suck at trackballs.
Creeping up on
you. You suck at a Tetris.
I was going to take those apart too and clean them for you. Ha! I won't do that.
Man. I guess you, unlike me, can touch a machine without ruining it.
I was curious if anybody had played Borderlands 2 since it came out.
I have not played Borderlands 2.
No.
Are you intending to?
I am very much. Everything that
Jenny's
I've heard
really
about
looking
it.
Looking forward to it.
Everything that I've heard about it leads me to believe that it is a game for me because I liked the idea of Borderlands, but I didn't. I barely played it.
Right.
Apparently, and what Anthony I want is Birch a new. Knocked the writing out of the park.
Good.
Really. Yeah.
I know my 13-year-old son only bought it. He got it for his birthday
because it had some tits.
And he got it only for the achievements that it unlocks. He has no interest whatsoever. He bought like four games for his birthday, and it's only for the achievements.
For the Xbox?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
He wants to pimp his gamer score.
Yeah. There.
Wow, really?
There are a number of achievements, I guess, that you get just for having, like, for plugging
purchasing.
The game and turning it on.
See,
not
we care about being core
for
gamers.
Playing.
He cares about his gamer's core.
Yeah.
Huh.
I failed as a father.
Yeah, I think
you
kind of did. That's
you gave your kid a dopey name, which is the first failure.
It's David. What's wrong with that name?
I rest my case.
Hey! You rest his case. But yeah, so we had like, he told me that he wanted to get it, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure if I'd like you playing that game. He's like, oh,
I
don't
want
to play
it. It's got a lot of tits in it.
I just want it for the achievements. And I'm
you
like,
want to try to make sure that your kid grows up gay, so you don't want him to see Moxie, whatever her name is boobs.
Fruvus?
Oh, yeah, Moxie Fruvus' boobs.
Moxie Crime Fighter Fruvus?
Ugh, that's illegal.
Yeah,
I don't think you're allowed
to
look
at baby.
Penn Jillette's daughter's boobs.
How old is she? She's got to be like six at this point, right?
Oh, okay. Well, then knock yourself out, Kevin. We'll be over here calling the Pope.
Oh, do you think he has a little siren? Maybe it's in his hat. Do you think his hat lights up?
Oh, man, that would be pretty sweet.
I mean, there's that whole bulletproof glass vehicle that he drives
the
around
Pope Mobile.
In. Yeah, so I think he doesn't need to have it in his hat, although that would be pretty cool, too.
Yep.
Oh, go-go gadget popo hat.
Mm-hmm.
So Borderlands 2.
Borderlands 2.
It's all about the achievements.
And boobs. I don't know. It's supposedly less about boobs. Maybe. I don't know. Man. I know that Anthony Birch probably didn't want it to be all about boobs because he seems to feel like that's a thing that you shouldn't do, make games that are just boobs.
I can get behind that.
You know, like his least favorite game is BMX XXX.
Oh, wow. Is that really a game?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was like just sort of about doing bike tricks.
Heard of
on people's boobs?
Looking at boobs.
It's just
topless
girls?
Probably. There's probably like a shrink ray where you have to grind the nipple. Or whatever. Or you have to, like, do a sick ollie from one nipple to the other. Yeah.
From the windpipe.
A sickly sweet.
Mm-hmm. To grind the windpipe.
So our listener, Arundel, writes, actually, not our listener. Who knows, man?
Yeah, let's just go for it.
KOL podcast listener Arundel says, I tend to regard things like what has happened to WoW, and by this I mean the loss of talent trees and the meaningful choices they offered lately, as diluting player agency in their own development in order to meet a sense of lowest common denominator. While this might be my inner dick stabber coming out, I usually regard this as a sign of late stage life in an MMO. I don't know that it is meaningful to say that World of Warcraft is late stage in its life. Like,
because it sets the whole bar for lifespan.
Because nothing at its peak has ever been as big as World of Warcraft is in its decline.
Yeah.
Right? If this is to be called its decline. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sure. I mean, next thing people are going to be saying that like the United States as a cultural leader is on a decline and whatever. Go USA. That's what I say. Except for unions, stupid pilots. None of our people can get into town. None of our everybody's like, oh, I can't come to your convention this weekend because the pilots said that they had mono. The pilots were going to a Mono Puff concert. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, is that like a cereal except there's only one thing in the box?
No, yeah. It was like John Flansburgh's not very good solo.
Okay.
In act. We were talking about this a little bit on the previous podcast about whether or not World of Warcraft's simplification of their talent system actually represents a regression towards the lowest common denominator. And I kind of argued that it doesn't.
I feel like they are, you know, and this might be just me drinking the Kool-Aid or whatever, but I feel like they are trying to...
You don't play World of Warcraft anymore, so no, it's not like you're...
But like I'm listening to the developers talk, and I don't know whether they're being honest or whether they're just trying to like tout some sort of official line or whatever, but like it seems like they are interested in making an experience for the players where they get to make meaningful choices, and they keep refining that notion, because the talent tree system, while looking like a bunch of meaningful choices, ended up, because of math, not actually being that meaningful. Yeah.
And none of those individual choices were very interesting.
Right. Yeah. Because like you would always pick particular like signature skills, which was something that they like sort of like focused on recently, and then they like just
it was like an awesome thing that you get to do because you're a fighter. You know.
Yeah.
And like that was what they were hoping the talent trees would do, is you'd pick those, and like you'd pick some utility skills, and then you'd like use your extra points to like sort of pad up some like, you know, sort of numbers and other stuff. But they did not feel like it was interesting to spend 5 points in a particular skill to go from +1 crit to +5 crit or whatever. And so they're just kind of excising that system. And I can see how a particular player might feel like, well, now I have way less agency, or now I have, you know, way less strategy.
But if it's a choice you weren't going to make anyway, you're not losing anything.
Yeah. Or if it's a choice that fails to be interesting because of the way that the complexity of the systems involved in it have sprawled out over this being a thing in live active development for 7 years, like you just can't, you know. You design systems for the game that you're making, not the game that somebody else is going to be making 6 years ago tacked on to the end of your game, right? And like the new talent system in World of Warcraft, where you don't have like points that you distribute, it's just that every few levels you get to make a choice of one of three skills, and you can more or less change those anytime you go back in a town, right? Like it's not, I don't think you can change, although there is some consumable that you can have that lets you change them on the fly.
Huh.
So like they could, which what that means is they probably start designing dungeons where one of them is useful in the first encounter, and then another one is useful in the second encounter to make it so you gotta buy those things, which, you know.
Do you have to buy them for real world money?
Oh, yeah. You actually have to go, you actually have to walk to Irvine and buy them from like a lemonade stand set up in front of Blizzard's offices. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I hear this complaint so frequently about other game systems too. Like you've been hearing this same conversation about D&D over the last three iterations.
D&D
not online, no, just the role playing game itself.
Oh, that they're making it like dumber and dumber.
Exactly,
or whatever.
Like because the world in which these games exist, the world that we live in, and because there are innovations, and because the theory behind what is making a game good is changing.
People. Yeah, like 4th edition felt to me like, you know, and you know, we've had arguments about this before. 4th edition felt like to me that they were taking a bunch of tropes from video games and like sort of pushing that into a tabletop role playing.
I felt like they put together a series of systems that made a lot of sense for a video game, but without any regard to how those systems worked in a role playing game.
But there are two thoughts that I kind of have behind that. The first is that if that ends up working in the one, and you know there shouldn't be a reason why you can't make it work in the other system as well. And you know, did that make sense?
Well, I mean, I think there's a bunch
because it is like a video game does not mean it is bad.
No, I know, but like there's a bunch of like role playing game systems that you can't really translate into a video game thing, which is like a lot of the like sort of on the
fly.
Yeah,
like wearing a cape and playing rock paper scissors with a fat girl in an alley.
Yes.
That's my favorite game.
But like, you know, a lot of the like player agency where they come up with something completely new that you would have never thought of,
this is where our argument about this has always run aground, is that nothing about the fourth edition D&D rules stops you from doing that.
Well, no, my problem with it was more the other way around. It was some of the mechanical stuff they added didn't make any sense in a narrative context and was not given any justification.
Like the encounter powers? Well,
but then I would counter that the player's job, if he cares about narrative justification, is to provide narrative justification for his actions.
Well, okay, so then what's the narrative justification for my fighter having a special way in which he can swing an axe at a dude that he can only do once a day?
Because, and this is the exact argument. Okay, so why in The Karate Kid did Daniel-san not just crane kick every fucking dude in the face and win every round of the tournament in the first few seconds? Because it is a shitty story. If there's not an awesome trick that you can pull off every once in a while, that is a worse story than if there is an awesome trick that you can only.
I thought the whole idea of the crane kick was that it wasn't that great of a move, but
it was sneaky.
It was unexpected because he had one leg.
Yeah,
but let's imagine that it was. Let's imagine that it was a sweet power move.
Okay, yeah, but if he had Death Blossom from
sure, there you go
from
Starfighter.
That was the last Starfighter. Yeah, the last Starfighter.
Like, you know, like, sure, use that every round of the fight.
Like, because it was a way of, like, because I feel like what you do in a game of Dungeons & Dragons that's fun is you say, I want to, like, grab this chandelier rope and throw my axe up at the chandelier and cut the other end of the rope so that I fly up there and then just like fucking just nail this dude with this other axe that I happen to have in my tunic or whatever. And that move is your chance to do that. But you can't do that every fucking time it's your turn.
Well, I mean, you can give a... That's a meta justification for that, but what's the in-world justification for
it? The in-world justification is the meta justification. The in-world justification is this is a balanced system. This is a system in which everybody has about the same amount of fun, regardless of what kind of class they're playing. And
everybody has the same amount of like power to do stuff, but like fun is a different thing, I think.
Sure, I guess. But Their goal was to make it so whatever choice you wanted to make as to what kind of dude you were, that you were able to accomplish some shit. That you were able to do some cool shit all the time, and then some really cool shit sometimes, and then some super amazing cool shit every once in a while. And that is...
So did you ever play any of the White Wolf games at all?
No, I was too busy talking to girls. What's funny is that if I had been playing White Wolf games, I probably would have been talking to some girls when I was too busy sitting at home writing games in BASIC.
Like, I always felt like I came from a background of playing a bunch of D&D games, and when the White Wolf games came out, I felt like they were kind of, for me at least, a revelation because they really encouraged storytelling. They encouraged the, like, I want to, like, jump up on the chandelier and, like, that kind of thing. And then gave you a system for adding some, like, randomness as to decide whether or not that could actually be possible. And your ability to, like, if you really wanted to, you could spend some very limited resource to override the randomness that might have fucked you, right? Sure.
And Shadowrun had the same sort of karma system. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so, like, there were a couple of, like, role-playing systems that did that, but in a much more general way so that you could tell those stories. But, like, making it a compartmentalized thing that is, like, a special way to swing your axe, like, to me, that takes a lot of the imagination out of it, right?
It can, in some cases, take away that level of imagination, but you're also dealing with a game, though, that they needed to have structured, formalized rules because people were not playing this just at a table at somebody's house. They were playing at a convention
over the internet.
And they were playing competitively. Like, you would have different groups of people going.
And they were playing
with
miniatures and stuff like that. Like, I was never interested in like that level of precision. Yeah. It was always more about like the sort of like a story you were telling with all the crazy shit going on.
It's a different kind of game. Like, in general, that's a different game than what they were trying to do really with four.
I mean, I don't want to argue, because I don't believe this, that certain systems do not encourage storytelling more than other systems. Mm-hmm. But I think I will say that I don't think that that is an acceptable fundamental objection to something, because it is a thing that if you care about getting around it, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then why wouldn't you just choose a different system that's even more friendly to what you want to do?
Well, apparently you will.
Okay.
Right? But I mean, that doesn't mean that you get to say like, oh, this is a bad system. I mean, you can just say this is not the system for me.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I'm saying is I felt like fourth edition was not the system for me. It took steps like if I wanted to play a game in the fourth system milieu, I would have just played online. I would have just played on a computer, I feel like. Right, because it does a lot of the things.
But then you don't get that like Cheeto farts.
That's true.
Experience.
Yeah. Didn't you have a lot of trouble with the wargaminess of fourth edition? Or am I
like having to deal with facing and like attacks
and
opportunity?
The fact that we played for an entire evening and got through two fights.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like, but that was more about the way that the module was designed, and that I didn't do any preparation for running that game. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, like, I don't know.
If you had, you would have just brought a really large rock, and then right as we were about to like end the evening, you would have just rolled it over the table and like, oh, sorry, you guys all died.
Yeah, everybody died. I mean, this is how the real world ends. Big rock hits us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that there is a danger in listening to people who get really into a video game that changes over time, because those people will be averse to any change, and they will say, you know, we had to deal, like, we will say of World of Warcraft that we think that it loses something by you not having to walk everywhere. Because back when we played, we dealt with having to spend all this time walking between places.
Uphill both
ways.
And that made it
a real world to us. And while that is a real feeling, that is not a feeling that we are entitled to inflict on other people. Right? And
well, you're choosing a bunch of, you know, words and verbs to like make it sound bad, but the idea of wanting everybody to feel like this is a world.
Wait, are you accusing me of using vocabulary to support rhetoric?
I am. Because inflict is a loaded verb, right? Like experience. Like I want everyone to experience the world the same way, and like.
But I guess what I'm saying is a lot of people did not like that thing that we liked. And so
that's more fair.
To say that Blizzard has chosen to dumb
to make
the
a
game,
bunch of other people happy.
To dumb the game down by making more people happy than were made by the old system.
I'm not sure that's a good example, because they've actually removed a lot of town portals from places and stuff, and they still require you to use the griffins to get to a lot of places. So they haven't really reduced a lot of travel time.
But they absolutely have, because they have totally like they have made it so you can turn in quests out in the world, right? Like they have made it so you have like
certain quests,
but a lot of like you do not have to do anywhere near as much backtracking, even running the same content now. Like
definitely where they have changed things is in not having to explore to find the thing you're looking for. You're pretty much told exactly where to go to get
your
quest.
Yeah, and see, for me, I did not do a lot of that anyway, because if I was like, well, fuck, do I want to spend an hour figuring out like which one of these fucking gnolls drops this gnoll nut that they want me to collect, or am I just going to go to Thoughtbot and look at a region on a map and then go there? And it was always the latter, right? Because a lot of the stuff that has been like taken away because of oversimplification of the systems is stuff that wasn't fun. Hmm. Like, it was just there because it was there. It was there because in a MUD you had to do that. It was there because in EverQuest you had to do that. And I think what these people are seeing and bemoaning as lowest common denominator oversimplification is actually just progress in making things more fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe it's a direction maybe it's a shallower direction to move in. But then what that means is that some niche thing will pop up that supports the small market for the thing that you liked when you were younger, and you can go support that with your money. But like, you're probably not going to. You're probably going to keep playing WoW. You're going to keep playing whatever big budget thing comes out, because they have figured out how to make you want to play it, regardless of what you say. That's what I say.
I would agree with all of that.
Damn right.
Damn it.
Because you know I'm going to punch you if you talk shit.
Well. Ow.
All right, so we got a tweet responding to who's drinking what. You realize that by saying these things that people will hear days after this tweet was posted or was not actually interfering with Right. This isn't live. There's no one.
When I said spoiler, I was kind of kidding.
There's no one listening to this show. Anyway, so somebody said that Kevin was drinking PBR, I was drinking whiskey, and Riff was drinking the absinthe because
hipster, snooty, weirdo.
Yeah, because Kevin is a hipster, I am snooty, and Riff is a weirdo. But you're wrong. I'm drinking the PBR.
Yeah. So, you know, Zach is the hipster.
Josh insists
snooty,
that I am actually a hipster, but...
You don't have a mustache? Although you don't have a mustache right now. You
sometimes,
often have a mustache.
Sometimes I have it. But I stopped. I stopped wearing a mustache when I started getting accused of being a hipster for wearing a mustache.
Do you wear anything ironically?
I don't.
You wear it because you love it?
Or because it's comfortable or easy or whatever. I mean, I like...
So you're either lazy or...
Okay, maybe I'm a lazy... Maybe I'm just a shitty hipster.
Yeah.
Shipster.
A shitster?
Shitster.
Shitstorm.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. That is where I get all my terrible music. It's from shitster. Kevin, what's in the news?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that. Okay, so Obsidian launched another Kickstarter.
Woo!
Well, that's mean.
I don't even know what's going on.
He's having
it's funny.
Fun.
I know, is, and so but... are we.
So Chris Avellone, who does nothing but drink all day, and some other dudes. So they what is interesting to me is that this is
their second million dollar Kickstarter.
When they haven't even finished the first one.
A lot of faith. People got a lot of faith in those dudes. And I think it's well placed.
Yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be fine. It's just weird. It's
I'm
like,
puzzled that it's what seems like a standard sort of Tolkien fantasy setting, which Chris Avellone in at least one panel there said he hates.
Although he did say, I mean, this, like, Planescape was evoked in the sort of elevator pitch sentence describing this new game. So I don't know that it's, I mean, did they say, fucking bullshit generic high fantasy? Give us $1 million, please, fuckers.
Yeah, for the stretch goals are, instead of elves, it's something awesome. Then the next one is, instead of dwarves, it's something awesome.
Yeah, so they got their $1.1 million in funding in 2 days and are now working on stretch goals.
I mean, maybe
stuff.
People had a lot of faith in them because of that first successful Kickstarter.
Huh.
I haven't funded either of them.
Yeah, I'll probably fund this. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, there wasn't anything really in the goals or in the rewards that tempted me to be a backer.
See, you're one of those pricks that funds based on the rewards rather than funding based on your belief in the project.
It also,
I know you're not one of those.
By the time I found it was already way more than funded, so it's not like they need my help.
I guess that would kind of make me the truest kind of Kickstarter supporter then.
Because you've never supported one.
Well, but I don't.
I think you
money.
Might be the hipster.
I never give any money to any of the projects that I want to see funded, but I always make sure that I get at least 5, if not more, of my friends
to fund them
to fund it.
So
you're like a promoter.
You're a middle manager.
You're a maven, as Malcolm Gladwell would have it.
Middleman.
A networker.
And then in like a pre-Kickstarter
news. A sex worker.
There we go.
Corey and Lori Cole, the developers of Heroes Quest, which became Quest for Glory, are going to be launching a Kickstarter next month for what they call Hero U.
I'm not whole for glory.
No. So Hero University or whatever, and it's going to be like a five-part game.
$5 million Kickstarter game.
Oh, I have no idea. Like, you know, and like, I love those games so much that I'm almost definitely going to pitch, like,
No, I will feed them some
but
dollars.
Did the Gabriel Knight one?
I don't know. I have not been paying as much attention to Kickstarter in the past month or two.
I missed the genre of Hero U.
Oh, I'm sure it's an adventure. I'm sure it's like an RPG adventure game. It probably has elves and shit.
It might.
They were like,
I wasn't
none
sure
of this,
from
none
the
of
that name, it
Planescape
almost made me think
that
it might be superhero.
No. It's a month Nobody away. Knows, but it's. Yeah. I think it is probably in not necessarily in the universe of Heroes Quest, but in the same genre style idea.
Gotcha.
I think it'll be like a fighter, mage, rogue sort of idea, paradigm. The founders of BioWare, the two doctors, have announced that they are retiring. And this comes almost exactly 5 years after they were acquired, that BioWare was acquired by EA. Mm-hmm. So there's some speculation out there that this is the earliest that they could have possibly left the company because of contractual obligations, and that they're just both bailing at the earliest possible opportunity.
Yes, Jan Jensen's Gabriel Knight Kickstarter did fund by 450,000 of 300,000.
Cool.
Boy, you know what? Fucking didn't. I have not looked at this since it actually ended, but this was kind of depressing, actually. I'm going to... I forget the guy's name. God damn it. The guy that made Pitfall.
Oh, yeah, that was in kind of a rough shape.
Yeah, no, that made, like, no money at all.
Oh.
I'm just going to search for a jungle.
I wasn't thinking Gabriel Knight. I was thinking Broken Sword.
Oh, a different thing entirely.
Is that a different sword, medieval sword fighting simulator?
No, it's a very similar game to Gabriel Knight. That's why I was confused.
Yeah, so it looks like the David Crane Kickstarter for David Crane's Jungle Adventure ended with 31,000 of $900,000. Because it... So
that sucks.
There's a lot of people talking about how, like, well, this guy made an awesome game 30 years ago, but he hasn't done shit since. And I don't actually, like, I read a lot of arguing back and forth about whether that was actually true or not. You know, what I do know is that the Kickstarter, like... I didn't fund it, even though I would have said, oh, yeah, I would support a project that this guy was involved in, because seeing it, it looked like it was sort of equivalent to, like, a guy that you went to high school with saying, like, hey, I got this idea for a video game. Can I have $1 million?
Right.
You know, and, like, a pedigree doesn't matter if you don't have anything to show.
Yeah.
Right? And it was like, what about the graphics? They're going to rule. What about the sound? Oh, it's going to be awesome. We're going to spend a fortune on it. Like, okay, what about the gameplay? It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it. Huh. There was, like, it just seemed like a half-baked project, and it's like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of depressing.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is asking for a lot of money.
$31,000 is a lot of money, too, right? Like,
yeah, but zero is not a lot of money.
Well, no, I know he didn't get any money. What I'm saying
is... I wonder if he'll do another Kickstarter that's like, hey, I'm trying to raise $31,000 to do like a...
Or do an Indiegogo like thing where you get the money regardless of how much it's raised.
Shitty game maker adventure jungle game.
Right, like, there's a bunch of other venues. Kickstarter's not the only game in town.
Yeah, but with if you did an Indiegogo project where you were like, I want 900 grand to make a video game, and then it funded 30 grand and they gave you that 30 grand, what the fuck are you going to do with that?
I don't know.
Like, you're going to, like, okay, turns out this
I don't even
a,
know that...
It turns out that rather than a vast, sweeping, epic video game, this is going to be a Red Lobster placemat.
I don't know if you're...
With some sweet activities on it that you can do in a jungle.
I'm not particularly familiar with Indiegogo, but I'm not sure if you have to specify an amount for situations where you're going to take the money regardless of how much you raise. Right? So I don't know that the...
I've never actually seen one that paid... whether it funded or not.
I know that's definitely
it's
an option.
It's a checkbox that I don't... Right.
I would
be reluctant to fund one that was like that.
I think that the Kickstarter model is like it is because it sort of forces you to come up with a budget and then convince people that that's a meaningful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would bet on Corey and Laurie Cole in a way that I would not bet on David Crane.
What has David Crane been up to for the last 30 years?
I don't know. He says he's been working on games. Huh. He made A Boy in His Blob, which, sorry to anybody who likes that, but A Boy in His Blob was fucking garbage.
I kind of liked it, but...
The original? I liked it conceptually, but it was impossible to play.
It was a neat idea. It was a neat idea, extremely poorly executed.
Yeah. I mean, knowing the genesis of how Pitfall was created, I don't have a tremendous amount of faith in David Crane, right? Like, because
what's that story?
I mean, Pitfall was created because he had a cool running animation for a figure.
Yeah, that's
fun. Right? Like, that was the literal genesis of Pitfall.
There was a lot of cleverness in there. Like, if you read Racing the Beam by Nick Monfort and Ian Bogost,
if you're into retro gaming systems and the Atari in particular, it is phenomenal.
It takes like an hour to read.
It's super short.
Racing the Beam, and there's a sweet Neuromancer joke.
Yeah.
And then I tried to go up to Ian Bogost and say, like, hey, I liked your sweet Neuromancer joke, and he was basically like, fuck you.
He didn't understand.
I'm like, I don't even agree with
the sentiment. Are you sure that he wrote that
ribbon.
Chapter? Because like, each
no,
they swapped
he probably
chapters.
Didn't. And I said, this is why I said to him, oh, hey, man, I read Racing the Beam, and I don't know if this was one of yours or one of the other guys, but I really appreciated that thing. And he was like, and he handed me
I'm guessing it was
he
the other
guys. He handed me his don't clone my indie game, bro, ribbon, which, like, Not, yeah. I like just because I'm super interested in putting my foot in my mouth.
Yep.
I'm going to go on record as saying that whole "don't clone my indie game bro" movement at GDC was sort of horseshit.
Speaking of indie games, Humble Indie Bundle 6 is out.
Good.
Yeah.
I paid for it even though there was like almost nothing in it that I didn't already have.
I didn't own any of it.
Good. I didn't own any of it.
Without
none of it seemed interesting.
You owned Torchlight.
Rock Hard is
Torchlight. Okay.
Yeah. Rock Hard is that game where you try to give Charles S. Dutton an erection.
Is it Rockhard or Rochard?
I don't know.
You know, it had some stuff that seemed interesting. Like, it is one of those situations where I'm going to give them a couple bucks to... I mean, I give them like 15, I guess, which is like the minimum.
I always just do 25. I always pop in the recommended amount.
Well, because...
One of these days, I'm going to get into sweet
I am not entirely sure that I will play any of these games, right?
Oh, sure, but it doesn't...
So, like, I just got the Steam key, I just unlocked them in the Steam, and then, like, they're going to sit there for years without me ever playing them.
Oh, man, do you think that those laptops have a Steam key on them?
Yes.
Like, if you press any key, all right, I know which one I'm going to press.
Anyways, there's like two more weeks left on this Humble Indie Bundle. It's got Torchlight, it's got... Rochard or Rockhard or whatever, Spaz, Vessel, and Shatter, and then
Spaz being Space Pirates and Zombies, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Like, I think there's a bunch of cool stuff. And then if you give over the average donation, you get Dust Force.
Oh, have you guys played FTL yet?
I played a bunch of the beta build of it that I got for supporting the Kickstarter, and have not played the final version.
A bunch of my friends have been playing it, but I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah. Like, it's like, good. Totally, it's really good.
Yeah.
Even though the sort of unfinished beta version, it wasn't even really unfinished. Like, it could have been a release game, and instead of having a bunch of stuff that said this isn't done yet, it could have just had nothing in those spots, and it would have been fine. I probably put 25 or 30 hours into it.
Wow. I didn't know this was that much.
Oh, it's good.
Huh.
Yeah. That's a good
game. I will eventually probably get it.
Yep.
It's on my list.
I might play a little bit of that tonight, actually.
I kind of want to go home and buy Borderlands 2 and play that.
Yeah?
Yep.
It's because it's on PC, right? It's PC and console?
I think. Yeah, I'm assuming it's on PC. I think that all of the things that they changed and polished and refined in Borderlands 2 are things that... It's going to be a new game for me because I did not play Borderlands 1 because I tried it twice and I had the exact same experience both times where there was nowhere that I could go that I could kill things that were worth experience without getting just murdered. Mm-hmm. And no one else that I've ever talked to has had that experience.
Yeah,
that
was weird because all the rest of us, like, enemies,
you know, my girlfriend described it that way also, and I wonder if maybe there's just something about the version, like something about my house. And its effect on the random number generator seed just makes it so three balls is too hard.
Well, yeah, if you've got three balls, that's going to be a difficult problem.
Do you think it would be easier or harder to give Charles S. Dutton an erection if he had three balls? Or if you brought one of those Knoll nuts? Do you think he's into that?
Are you massaging the balls? Are you trying to do the, like, labyrinth... Michael Motion thing with the balls?
I think you need four of them, and I'm not sure that I trust anyone who knows the name of the guy that did that.
Michael Motion?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I knew that.
I'm not sure I trust either of you guys. Dave, did you know that?
I'm taking the fifth. How come you didn't know that?
So in the same sort of spirit as the Humble Indie Bundle, but with sort of a different model, is this thing that which is launching on the 26th of September called Indie Game Stand. Have you guys heard about this?
Nope.
Every 4 days, they're going to put up a new indie game where you just sort of give what you want to buy it, and some of it goes to charity, and some of it goes to the developer, and some of it goes, like, it's very much, it's sort of in the style of the bundle.
Except single game.
Single games.
But it's one game
every day. 4 days. Every 4 days.
Huh.
And so we'll see how that works.
Well, every day for me ends in a 3-day long bender that I don't remember, so every 4 days is sort of like...
It's like every day. Yeah. Okay, that explains a lot, actually.
If they do some Mac games, that'll be cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to commit to the same sort of Windows.
That's one of the things
Mac,
that I really
Linux
respect
things.
About the Humble...
They force them to be every platform.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see. I have no idea how this is going to go. I think it's an interesting idea. And we'll see how it pans out. I don't want to have to remember to check back every 4 days.
Yeah.
I also don't want an email every 4 days.
I bet they'll RSS it.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll have a mailing list that you can subscribe to.
Yeah, but RSS is
you heard it
cooler
here.
Than
if you don't RSS it, you're not smart.
Yes.
That's interesting. You prefer an RSS feed versus an email. Like, email is something that I check every day.
I check email, but I consider email to be things that are important and personal.
Okay.
Like, you know, like bills and personal messages from people I know.
Like
whereas the RSS feed is for things out in public on the internet,
like
that I want to check regularly. Yeah, like a Z Frank show.
But you have to remember to check them. Whereas email,
yeah, but you
yeah,
make
but
it
that's
your homepage
why the
on
RSS
your browser. Like,
reader is for.
Google,
so you
Google
don't
Reader,
have to
Google Reader is my homepage on my browser, and so the blogs that I know that I would not remember to go to, mm-hmm. I just put in the RSS feed.
Google
and
News
so
is my homepage.
I read them every day
because I won't remember. I won't remember to.
About
yeah,
the world.
That may be the truth.
Google News is the top bookmark in my. In my phone bookmarks list.
Okay.
So that's a thing that when I run out of Metafilter or whatever, I'll just be like, oh, Google News. I'll go read some
bullshit. I thought you were going to say run out of Reddit. And I was like, is that even possible? Mm-hmm.
I wish... maybe a listener can help me out with this. I want news without any particular political bias. And I don't feel like Google News is
BBC
particularly good.
What, really?
No, but even the BBC is going to have.
You don't feel like, because
yeah,
I feel like there are stories
be
on both sides of every fence. And like, I don't think it's particularly liberal or conservative. I mean, I guess that maybe that's disingenuous given how much money Google has given to the Democratic campaign. But
something that I thought was funny was I have a local Google News section, and one of the local stories for Mesa, Arizona was the release of Black Mesa Source,
right.
Which I'm not sure their algorithm is checking the right things.
I read today that the computing power it takes to do a single Google search is equivalent to all the computing power that was used on the ground and in the air for the entire Apollo program.
Mm-hmm.
I could easily see that.
They did not, like NASA was notorious for using extremely old tech because it was stuff that had been demonstrated
reliable.
To work reliably mm-hmm. in zero gravity. Mm-hmm. And so for a long, like they, every time they went up, they would have to like, or if we have the spare time, we will take some new computers up there to see if they work and run these tests on them to know if we can build those into the next craft. Like when we were in, you know, like when we were in college, they were still using like 386s on board the space shuttle.
Man, I think about that like Curiosity landing and it just like makes me super happy every time I think about it. That was just the coolest thing. I mean, platform.
I hated that thing. I'm glad it's far away from us now.
A rocket platform that like drops a thing slowly onto the surface of another planet. That is super cool.
Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I have no idea what, like, they're probably running that all on a Apple IIe's.
No, that one, I mean, that was like I don't know. I feel like that was more like that. Like since there weren't lives at stake there, I feel like they could afford to take more risks.
Billions of dollars.
Untested. Yeah, but lives, buddy. One life is worth trillions of dollars.
Huh.
Haven't you ever seen an actuarial table? That's what they are. It's just a single line that says one life, trillions of dollars.
Huh, I feel like my life insurance company is getting off easy then. The only other news article that caught my eye was that Zynga was countersuing EA for their lawsuit against The Ville.
Not surprising.
I mean, EA suing Zynga
it's probably
over what
that
was
anything.
Not the right thing. That was not a way to make the world any better. And so
I wonder,
Zynga
you
countersuing,
say that.
Zynga countersuing is not a way to make it any worse.
Maybe it is a way to make them better. Because like somebody with deep pockets suing this guy, which everybody agrees is a bully, maybe that is, you know.
You don't think everybody agrees that EA is a bully?
I have no idea. I mean, everybody agrees that EA is kind of a terrible place to work, but I don't hear about them being bullies.
There was an EA employee who wrote us an email saying that he took umbrage about us saying that EA forces their employees to work a lot of overtime, but then he realized that he was, at that moment, working overtime. And then he was less pissed off.
Awesome.
But no, he said, like, you know, he was like, I work at EA and it's not bad.
Huh. Well,
so,
cool.
Of course, you know, he's one of the 1%. He works at EA as a fucking, like, I don't know. I was going to say, like, a gold doorknob polisher, but that would not be a
blowjob tester.
Yeah. they're testing these haptics.
Right, right.
They're recording. They're making brain recordings of dudes getting blown.
Teledildonics.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You can always tell a dildonics, but you can't tell it much. Gentlemen, the assignment.
Yeah.
Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. Yeah, that's your thoughts.
did you even load this game and touch it?
Yes, I played it for about 10 minutes and then I said, this is no more fun than it was the last time I tried to play this game. And then I watched a Let's Play of the entire thing.
Was it like one where they were cheating and running through walls
and
shit?
No, it was a fair one. I mean, he knew some clever tricks, like he knew how to jump to kill the Iron Knuckles pretty easy and stuff like that, but he didn't do any cheats or anything.
Is that what dark nuts are called in this one? Iron Knuckle?
I think so, yeah.
Iron Knuckles.
Yeah. Which would you rather have, dark nuts or Iron Knuckles?
Iron knuckles.
But what if they're like immobile? What if you can't type anymore because your knuckles are iron?
I would be able to hang from large electromagnets.
Okay, but then you wouldn't be able to escape. You wouldn't be able to stop hanging from large electromagnets. I'm saying dark nuts is the neutral choice here.
I don't know about that. Man.
It doesn't hurt or help anything.
I mean, how did they get dark? I think they were probably roasted.
Yeah.
Over an open fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if it's like the opposite of something that sheds light and it just takes all of the light away, and then
if you take your pants off, the room suddenly goes dark.
And then you can't read in bed anymore.
Yeah.
You have to put pants on.
Wait, I mean,
yes. Yes.
So if
he used to read by the light of
his
mouth.
If you wake up in the middle of the night and go to the kitchen to get a midnight snack and you open the refrigerator door, what happens?
Oof, man, that's deep.
Have you been storing
just an explosion.
Some other dark nuts in the fridge?
So if you went down in the middle of the night, opened your refrigerator to find a plugged-in crock pot inside the refrigerator, what would happen?
I guess I'd be confused.
Everything is just totally room temperature and really expensive. I think the reason that I disliked The Adventure of Link when I was a kid is because it was really hard.
Really hard and really drab.
Playing it with save states, I agree that it's pretty drab.
Well, okay. Compared to... So we just played Zelda 1. And I felt like this was similar in a lot of ways to Zelda 1. Had more interesting combat. And some even more bullshit secrets.
I don't know that I agree. Like, I guess the combat is more engaging.
Yeah,
right.
Because more engaging.
You have more like standard movement verbs because you can jump and you can down thrust and up thrust and whatever. I got maybe two thirds of the way through the game, so I did not get to the point where I could up thrust.
Yeah, that's really late verb.
The thing that makes me feel like it is not as much a game for me is that in exploring the overworld of The Legend of Zelda, I felt like there was a lot of secret stuff to find and that I was going through varied environments. And in the overworld of Zelda 2, I felt like it was like a sort of a shitty Dragon Warrior overworld that was only there to set the stage for the visible things that were just keys and locks.
Yeah.
Huh.
And
so you didn't make a point of exploring all the different locations, like walking over everything to find all the secret stuff?
No, because I didn't want to deal with the fucking random encounters.
Well, but you have save states, so you can avoid most of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, and for the most part...
There also isn't anything out there.
Well, yeah. There's stuff out there, but all the stuff out there that's important, there are fairly reasonable clues as to the fact of where
it is.
Like,
this is a cave, so you should go into it.
There's townsfolk who will give you hints about
it. I will argue with you about the fucking bullshit hidden town.
Okay.
Because, God damn it, that was frustrating. Like, I was trying to play this without spoilers, and
you have to find the guy in the ruined town, and he gives you a hint about where the
check the forest to the east, right? So, like, up to this point, you have just had to walk over a space to find what the fuck is going on in it, right? And I walked over every single fucking eastern forest space, and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this? You have to go and just intuit that you use your hammer on a forest space because you've never had to do... Yeah, you've never had to do that up to this point. And that's how you find the fucking hidden town.
I must have... The dude I watched must have skimmed over that
because I didn't notice that. I don't think you have to do this... I don't know that you have to do this to beat the game, but you might, actually, because I don't think you can beat the second to last boss without getting that town and then going back to the guy who told you to go to the forest. but bullshit, like fucking bullshit.
So because when you are moving around, the only verbs that you have are jump and stab, and there are only two buttons on the NES controller, all of the new things that you get are not a cool thing that you can do. They are a passive
you
ability.
Don't, yeah, you don't get like mm-hmm. you don't get a boomerang. You don't get
you don't get different ways of interacting with the environment, and you get a lot less environment to interact with. There are like, I think there are probably a third as many enemy types in this game as in the first Zelda.
I would say maybe half, but a lot of them are repeats. Like, you know, they're the same.
I feel like Phyla. every
single one,
every monster that's in Zelda.
There's no
There's no P-hats, there's no levers.
There's no Tektites.
Which ones are the? No, there are Tektites.
Are there?
Yeah, you need the fire. There's blue jumping spider things.
Those are Tektites?
Yeah.
No, those are different. Those are
there are just spiders in the
in Zelda one. Those are the jumping dudes.
The spiders, but yeah, Tektites, the jumping.
Are those
dudes.
The spiders?
Tektites are the things
it was late.
Eye.
That's late in the game. You might not have gotten to them. Mm. You can only kill them with the fire spell.
Yeah, those are obnoxious. They are just completely immune to your sword. Yeah. The fact that a lot of the later weapon enemies are just immune to sword swordplay is kind of annoying.
Yeah,
because you have to use fire. Like the spells.
I mean, it's like a fake way of giving you additional ways of interacting with the environment, right? Like, but those spells are sure they're things that you can do, but it's like
because they only last for one screen, they're pretty underwhelming.
Yeah,
yeah.
And magic is
they're
not
like a
that
thing that
common.
You feel like you have to do because otherwise you're gonna die.
Yeah,
and which is different with save states. With save states, I just leveled attack all the way up before I leveled up any of the other things because that's the thing that like
it
makes
the
game
go faster. It is interesting that it let you the fact that it had this sort of very variable level up mechanic where you can choose which of your stats you wanted to increase every time you hit a experience cap. I thought that was fairly interesting.
Yeah, I like that as well.
Yeah, they didn't have to give you the ability to do that, and they did.
So, but besides the like the lack of like cool additional like attacks that you got in Zelda 1, the combat itself was more interesting. Like having to like actively defend against a lot of attacks, and then also like attack high or low, or you know try to jump around. Like some of the later enemies, the best way to fight them is to wait until they jump over you, and then like jump up and like upper thrust into them. While they're jumping, and like it took me a while to figure that out, and then I was really proud of myself for thinking, oh, they're like vulnerable while they're jumping over you, and such a pain in the ass otherwise. So like they're I just
felt
like
they are a pain in the ass unless you are a pain in theirs.
There's a bunch of enemies that like you can kill, but are really hard unless you just sort of bounce off of them by doing the downward thrust and stuff. Like there was it felt each enemy was fair, but hard. And in the same sort of way that like a Castlevania game was good.
Yeah,
right?
Except like the thing that started bugging me is like once I felt like it's like now I can fight these dudes. All right, now fight one where there's one of those little fire shitting ghost eye things just ruining your shit all the time.
It makes it that much more
it's
challenging.
Like, fuck that.
Yeah, I feel pretty sympathetic about this, and I'm not sure how much of it was me like still loving this game from when I was a kid, right? Because this was I played this game before I played Zelda 1.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I think that's just just the chronology of when I played the Zelda games.
I mean, I think if you took A Link to the Past and reskinned it as, like, a sci-fi game where you were swinging a lightsaber, it would feel more like a Zelda game than Zelda 2.
Huh.
To me.
Interesting.
Like, I think if you reskin Zelda to make, like, maybe you are Rambo, then you would never... You would never connect that this was a Zelda game.
The last castle, gigantic, and the last bosses, just like completely unfun, so hard.
Which one? The big bird thing?
There's like the like, yeah, I don't know what they're called.
Bird thing and the guy
shadow
with the
form.
Mason chain that he swings around.
No, the last guy is the like. The flying thing that shoots stuff at you, and you have to use the thunder spell. So I think you might have to, like, you have to like find the hidden town to be able to like actually beat this guy, and then you can hit them.
And then Dark Link.
And then the shadow. Yeah, then the shadow.
Do you guys know
warrior.
What year offhand
Shadow Link is actually trivial to beat.
Well, if you use sort of like an exploit kind of thing.
Yeah, sitting in the corner.
Yeah, but like if you actually try to fight him, hard as hell.
Yeah.
And I didn't try to like exploit kill anything. I was trying to actually just play the game. I mean, plus save states.
What?
Like,
who
plus,
are you?
Plus save states. That's the thing, right? Like that's the game for me was a lot of fun because I could just restore at any moment to earlier when I felt secure. And like, you know, I'm wondering if maybe that's sort of a verb that did modern games that have sort of like Twitch style combat, the ones that have quick save, did they exist after emulators came out that like introduced this, or did emulators follow in their footsteps? Like what was the like lineage there?
Well, I mean, I think that quick save only got practical after a certain amount of computing power was there,
mm-hmm.
right? Like being able to quickly put that much, commit that
but
much
was
data.
But was it an innovation that came out of emulation, or was it an innovation that came out of a game designer thinking, oh, this would be a great idea?
I don't know. I feel like I encountered them around the same time, right? Like Half-Life 1 was, I think, the first game that I made extensive use of quick saves in, and that was, what, like 98?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think, like, just from a design perspective, it was the idea of a quick save was not something that game designers would have even wanted at that point.
Well, it's an interesting decision, right? Because, like, I feel like a lot of early game design was all about making the player feel like they got their money's worth by extending gameplay by killing them a lot, right? Like,
but there was
also out of that arcade mentality.
This game had lives. Zelda 2 had, like, which we didn't encounter. There wasn't a problem for us because we didn't, like...
You collected 1-up dolls and stuff.
You collected 1-ups, but, like, it's not like the game was over when you ran out of lives. Like, having that as this just, like, bizarre vestige of quarter-eating arcade... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, that is...
And it still exists. The new Mario games still have lives for no good reason.
Yeah. I mean...
It's a legacy thing.
Collecting
though, right?
Lives is fun, I guess, right? You always have more than you need. Mm. Maybe, I don't know, unless you're like a baby.
I mean, but
then you have as much real life. You have as much real life as anybody gets when you're a baby. So, like, you know, maybe you don't get.
I remember farming lives in Mario Brothers, right? Like, you'd get to hard parts that you weren't sure you could beat, and you wanted to make sure that
so
you didn't get
screwed. But lives are a legacy of the arcade to make your quarter not last forever, right? So how would we feel about the adventure of Link if your health had just slowly deteriorated over time, even when you weren't getting hit, right? I think we would have decried that as bullshit because it doesn't
could
make any sense.
Could you eat food to bring
context.
It back up?
Yeah, you could just put more quarters in. You had to actually get the quarters thing plugged into your second Famicom controller that you
had to mail back.
Yeah. a guy comes to the door every week or so and empties it.
So, I say we do 2 weeks of The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past.
Okay. You think 2 weeks is enough?
Let's say we can do three.
Okay.
If we need to do three. Because we're busy for the next
week. The week for sure. Week for sure. We're definitely busy.
If you guys weren't doing anything else, I could see you all chewing through it in a week, but...
It's long.
Yeah, it's long.
But it's also a game that we have all played in.
Yeah, we have all played it, but we all really like it, so I think
we
will...
I haven't played it to completion, but
oh, really?
I have enjoyed it, yeah.
Wow.
Plus, I'm going to want to try and play it without a walkthrough.
Yeah, I'll try that.
You're going to play it for 5 minutes, and then you're going to be like,
let's play.
It's hard. I'm going to watch it. Let's play.
I like that game.
I tried really hard not to get a walkthrough on Link to the Past, and I had to
in the other problem
two
is that,
separate instances.
Pandaria comes out on the 25th.
Pantera?
Pandaria.
You're going to go to a Pantera concert?
I'm going to, it lasts for like a month.
You expect that the drugs that you do will probably not be completely out of your system for a month after the Pantera concert. All right. Well, I don't think that we have time for a listener's mail segment on account of
the one listener's mail that we answered to.
We already did a listener's mail, and then we spent a lot of time talking about in response to that question about, wow, we spent a lot of time talking about 4th edition D&D.
Yeah.
Also my mom.
So if somebody
and
wanted
to... Karate Kid.
I think that was in the... I think your mom was in a previous show.
No, she was in this show.
Was she?
No, I guess
she
was last show.
Did she get
show.
Hacked again?
Yeah.
Her computer got tuckered out.
I've been calling her the past 2 or 3 weeks, and she's like, oh, I'm busy, I can't talk right now, but I've got a lot to tell you, and sorry, I'll call you right back. And
I'm then currently she just being plowed by 50 dudes.
Never calls.
That's what she keeps saying.
She just never calls.
In fact, she just changed her greeting. Hi, this is Leilani. I'm currently being plowed by 50 dudes, but leave a message, and I'll call you back after I'm done getting plowed by 50 dudes.
Yep.
And then she names all the dudes. Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail that we could then answer a different question than the one that they were asking, how would they do that?
Well, they could tweet at us, at VG Hot Dog.
Kevin, if somebody wanted to call you a hipster and me snooty, how could they do that?
I think they should definitely tweet us. That seems to be the primary mode for that kind of communication.
Kevin, if somebody wanted to tell us that they were feeling down, but then they trimmed their pubic area and now they felt dominate, how would they do that?
At @Matthew_Lillard.
No, there's no underscore.
I don't even know.
Man, you think Matthew Lillard has time for a fucking underscore?
He's too busy.
He's got time for an undercarriage.
He's so... okay.
So you could also email us, vghotdog@gmail.com. Are we ever going to get vghotdog@vjhotdog.com?
Oh, I don't know.
Or vghd@vghd.
We don't own vghotdog.com.
It's because it's like Virtua Girls Hot Dog.
No, it's Virtua Girl High Def Hot Dog.
Hot Dog, yeah. And then you could also check out our forums at videogameshotdog.com.
Good. Nice. I'm glad that you finally remembered that.
Well, I had a brief momentary lapse, hey, Kevin, of reason. Yeah.
If there was some dude who wanted to
plow my mom.
But how would he go about contacting her?
Match.com. Well, and I'm not even fucking kidding. Match.com. My mom is
first,
fucking on Match.com.
He's going to need to find 49 other dudes.
One from each state.
She's got needs. She's not fooling around anymore.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to episode number 70 of Video Games Hot Dog, and we'll see you next time.
Woo, yeah. Goodbye. Have a great week, everybody.
See ya.
I always thought that saying was that you can't get turnip juice from a turnip, and I was like, well, where the fuck does it come from, grandma? And then she was like,
yeah, it comes from grandma.
I'm washing your mouth out with 3-in-1 oil because I ran out of soap. It was rough. It was a rough childhood.
I mean, yeah, but you could eat a lot faster after that.